Blog Talk Radio.
Are you there, Katya?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
I'm right here.
Great to have
Hi.
You. Hi. Welcome. Such an honor that you could we could do a show on such an amazing, profound topic as the Wounded Feminine Archetype. And let's jump in and have you introduce yourself and tell listeners a little bit about who you are and some of your background.
Hey, I'm Dr. Keita Gatos. I'm a psychologist in Chadsford, Pennsylvania, and I've been doing this work since 1972. And recently I've written a book, Quiet Wisdom in Loud Times, The Rise of the Wounded Feminine, and I'm hoping that we get to talk about this a little bit tonight.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And so you're kind of coming from a Jungian perspective, or... I know you also have
There's a Jungian perspective. It is, because I think it is the Jungian perspective that helps us see that there's the feminine in men as well as in women, and that women carry a masculine as well as men. So that the anima and the animus are important in both men and women, that soul quality in both men and women. But what has gotten forgotten is that we have, over the past few thousands of years, a very patriarchal way of being. Rhianne Eisler pointed out in Chalice and the Blade many years ago about how we needed to return to a partnership model. And we're not there. We're still in a patriarchal model. And I think what we see right now in the world is actually, though, where the wounded feminine is rising. And I think we're seeing that in our culture. We're seeing that in media. We're seeing it in movies. We're seeing it in books. We're seeing it on the TV. And I think that there's a real clash happening in the sense that the patriarchy is pushing for a change back. It doesn't want the partnership model. It doesn't want the feminine principle to rise in both men and women. That the patriarchy is, hopefully it's this dying last gasp of breath, but it's fighting hard so that a lot of times we see the feminine devalued and put down. If I can, and if it's okay, I'd like to relate two stories that led me to the book.
Can I have you, just before you get started, just to let our listeners know what you mean by patriarchy, and certainly we see the destruction of the earth as an example of that, and do you want to flesh that out?
Absolutely. The patriarchal model, patriarchy that we have been living in for thousands of years is it's about domination, winning, power, control. And what we need to return to is a model of partnership which includes the feminine principle of relationship, connection, compassion. It isn't that we don't need forcefulness and thrust and, you know, linear thinking sometimes, but it has gotten us technology. It has gotten us very far in this world. However, if it's imbalanced, if it's out of balance and skewed, is going to do us in. And it's really time for us to pay attention to how the patriarchy is ruining the earth, the environment. You know, it's like the bulldozers come through, the fracking happens, we don't care about the earth, the air, the water quality, and all that is a part of patriarchal thinking. It's very myopic thinking. It's very much oriented to bottom-line money-making, for example, and with no thought of the future, no thought of what the Native Americans would talk about for seven generations. How is this going to affect seven generations forward? So patriarchal affects us in all sorts of ways.
Sure, and it's so much of it is unconscious and this gets repeated. So,
absolutely, we all swim in the patriarchal sea. We all act out patriarchally, whether we're men or women. And I hasten to add that a lot of times we think, oh, feminine, that's all about women. Well, actually, there are some women who are more daughters of the patriarchy and really don't eschew the feminine principle, really. And whereas some men actually hold the feminine principle better than women do. So it's not about the gender, woman or man. It's more about the characteristics and the qualities of the feminine principle that must be carried in both men and women.
Right. It needs to be balanced. So, yeah, absolutely. So let's hear these stories. How did you come to this?
Well, I came to this. I was going to write a book, Quiet Wisdom in Loud Times, Women of Heart Who Need to Be Heard. And then a couple things happened that really kind of turned me to this new topic or correlating to that other topic. But across the street from my house, there's a community fair every year. It's a colonial community fair. And what happened a couple years ago was that, lo and behold, I see a man dressed in colonial garb as a woman, and he is being, and he has this punishment, this brank, what is like this headpiece on his head to stop him from speaking. And he's wearing a sign. He did this to himself. I mean, he wanted to walk around dressed like this, and he chose to do this. And he was dressed colonial in this woman's outfit, and he wore a sign saying gossip. In other words, he was showing this is what happens to women who gossip in colonial times. Well, first of all, that was appalling that he was doing this. I thought, well, maybe he's doing it to educate everybody, and I wasn't quite sure what his story was. But what I heard men say was, isn't this great? This is how it should be. Women, we should get this back again. This is how we need to treat women. I was astounded. And I actually confronted one of the men, and I said, what was that you were talking about? He said, well, you know, there he was. He was dressed up and getting that punishment in colonial times, and, yeah, we ought to bring that back. And his parting words to me was, just don't gossip. And I thought, whoa. So it was astounding to hear these family men, so-called family men, be so against women and wanting to shut women up. And that got me really wondering, wow, you know, the patriarchy is very close at hand. It's across the street, and it's in my neighborhood. And then after that, I saw the Larson trilogy, the Swedish movies, but I saw the second movie first, The Girl Who Played with Fire. And I happened upon this. I had not read the books. I had not done anything with the books. And I go to the movies, and at the end of the movie, I see... Yeah, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was the first book and first movie, and then the second one was The Girl Who Played with Fire, and that's the one I saw first, the second one. And in the second movie, you see her, Elizabeth, the protagonist. She's being buried alive, well, she's being buried by her brother and her father because they've shot her. And they leave her for dead, and you see her hand at the end of the movie coming out of the grave. She was alive. And I gasped in the movie theater, and I thought, oh, my God, this whole series is about the rise of the wounded feminine. And so I went back and I read all the books, his books, the Larson trilogy. I saw all the movies, the Swedish versions. And that really clinched it for me that Larson was really onto something about patriarchal values or patriarchal culture and how it was about the feminine principle and the wounded feminine and in men and how women were being affected by it. So that's what led me to kind of going in the route that I went to with this book. And then what I began to see was that the wounded feminine, if you start looking around with that perspective, you see it everywhere. And globally and in society in this country, but not just in this country, all over the world. And so I began to look at the media in this country beyond the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. I began to look at television and movies in the same way. And actually, I think I have been looking at them that way before this, too. I discovered some of the things that I had written earlier, way back in 2008 or so, that I was coming up with the same things then, too. So it was all gelling. And I think that... I think that we all need to come with a consciousness to when we look at anything, when we hear the news, when we watch a TV program, we really need to pay attention. What is the message? Is this a patriarchal message we're being given? Is this the rise or the burial of the wounded feminine? Is the feminine principle being honored here or dishonored? And I think that's just what we need to do more and more. So I don't know. Is there anything specific you wanted to ask me about that? I'm thinking right now about House of Cards.
I want to just tell our listeners, because I went by quickly and some might not know it. So the author was Stieg Larsson, a Swedish author, and a trilogy book. So the first one was The Girl with the Green Dragon Tattoo. And particularly the Swedish version of those movies is so powerful. Americans are too ignorant to read subtitles, so they had to make an American version, which is far less, I thought.
I totally agree. Randy, the American version, really, I was very upset with it. And actually, Noomi Rapace, who was the Swedish actor for Lisbeth in the Swedish movies, I heard her be interviewed a couple times, and she so got what she was doing in those movies that that she, first of all, said that playing Lisbeth, she felt in some ways braver and stronger in her own life, but in another way, she really felt the alienation and how the stranger part of how Lisbeth felt. And then she also said that at the end of making the three movies, when they were having the champagne toast and the big party, she actually went into the bathroom and shook and retched for about 15 or 20 minutes. And I was so impressed with her as an actor because she said that, because to my mind what that said was that she so carried the archetype of Lisbeth that she had to shake it off of her. And she also had to shake off the trauma that she carried with that archetype. And I was very impressed with how she really embodied that character so well and did such a great job of that.
I'm through in her acting. She really is generally the archetype. It's so amazing. Absolutely.
Yep. And interestingly enough, too. Go ahead. It was interesting that a lot of times people kind of comment, she really hadn't any feeling, and that is so not true. She was so close to the Palmgren, who was the older gentleman who was so kind to her, and she was so devoted to him. And then there's a scene in which you see her going to her mother in the nursing home. Her mother had been terribly beaten and wounded by the father, and ended up in a nursing home after that for years. And actually, that actor that played the mother is actually Noomi Rapace's mother. So I thought that was especially touching to know that was her true mother in life. So that was an interesting little twist to it, too.
Yeah.
But she had a lot of
connection
and feeling.
And then another movie that's capturing modern, the current imagination is, of course, The Hunger Games also. Do you feel that's one?
Yes. And actually, that's interesting, too, because Jennifer Lawrence, I mentioned in the book, as having also played in Winter's Bone. And if our listeners have not read or seen Winter's Bone, that is an excellent, excellent depiction of the rise of the wounded feminine. And in that, I'll get to Hunger Games in a minute, but that Winter's Bone, it's about a 17-year-old young girl who has to find out whether her father has died or not and prove that he has so that she can save the family house. And it's all about, it's a long story about in the backwoods of Appalachia and what she has to go through to prove that they can keep their house is just amazing. And interestingly enough, it was Jennifer Lawrence in that, who plays also Katniss in The Hunger Games. And so Jennifer Lawrence, like Noomi Rapace, seems to really ring true to her characters. And The Hunger Games, I think, is a very good depiction, too, of the rise of the wounded feminine, and how there's also the feminine principled male in PETA, her cohort. And so I think that the same archetypes as happen in the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series occurs in the Hunger Games and against the patriarchy. It's interesting that some movie critics are like, oh, this is such hyperbole. They're talking about Hunger Games. And I'm thinking, where's the hyperbole? We send young people off to war all the time, and the old people are kind of going, the old men, you know, are sending the young men and women off to war. So I don't think it's a hyperbole at all.
Well,
and,
I think it's resonating so deeply, and that's why it's so popular. And maybe they're dismissed because it's, you know, a brilliant critique of the obsession with the superficial hyping of media, celebrity culture, and various things like that. And
yeah, exactly. It brings it all together. So, yeah, it's all in there.
And Occupy, I couldn't believe it, particularly the second movie. So powerful and so right on with about so many issues and so timely.
You know, I have not seen the second movie yet, I must admit. I've read all the books, so I'm going to have to go and see the second movie.
Yeah, you have to see it. It really captures the whole feeling of the 1% versus the 99. And
Yep. And there you have the patriarchy once again. It's that plutocracy is a part of the patriarchy, that sense of, like, just a small percent gets it all.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and it's in the Hunger Games as our metaphor.
Right, right. Another story that is a backstory to the King Arthur's story. I was taking a seminar with Bonnie Dameron, a Jungian here in Washington, D.C., and she was teaching about the backstory to King Arthur and, you know, how he gets sick and his connection with the land. And the backstory is the story of the naiads and the wells, the sacred wells where the traveler would go and get nourished. And then there was a time when there was a rape and a violation of one of the naiad goddess-like protectors of the wells. And that was kind of echoing this beginning of the rape of the feminine and the imbalance of patriarchy. Interesting. The thing goes, you know, all the way. It's also there in Demeter and Persephone and a lot of different.
Yeah. It's been with us for thousands of years, but we're not going to get very far if we don't change it soon. I really do feel like we are at the crux of it, in the sense of how much women are coming to the fore. Let's say, you know, young women like Malala, young women that are speaking out all over the globe. And so I think that there is a change in that sense, and there is a change in terms of the consciousness of many men. And so there is that happening. But like I said before, that because there is such a, a transformation of consciousness occurring, in the sense that it's getting more and more heard, that the patriarchy is fighting hard and is trying to push it all back. Except the genie's out of the bottle, so it doesn't go back in. You know, it's like it's all here to stay, I hope.
Yeah. So can you expand on that more, about what do you mean by the genie's out of the bottle?
Well, I mean, we've had such a transformation with, even anything that kind of moves humanity to a more evolved place, I think, is really part of getting back into balance. And so getting back into balance in terms of the feminine and the masculine. So we've had the civil rights, and even though I think there's still racism, obviously there's still racism, and I think part of Obama's issues in the White House are that you know, there's some very racist people in Washington or and elsewhere. So I think that's still happening. However, we did have the civil rights movement. And so I think that transformation of consciousness, you can't go back on that. It doesn't, it's a movement of consciousness forward. And I think the same thing with how women, you know, moved to get to vote. And then we moved to have all the changes with women in the 1970s. That's another movement. And we have women everywhere speaking out. And we have men speaking out. And so there's such a rising of voices and a rising of stories that I think that it doesn't go backward. That, you know, we can't go backward. And the push is by the patriarchy is to change back. They want the good old days. Well, the good old days were not good. They were bad old days. Yep. They want to go backward. And no, we're not going to go back to slavery. We're not going to go back to women as second-class citizens. We're not going to go back to anything that demeans us. And so I think they're still going to push. And I think what happens, though, we can collapse into it and go, they're so loud, the patriarchy's so loud and shrill with what they do and noisy, that we kind of think, they've got the stronger voice. Oh, well, we have to give up. No, we need to keep on going and moving forward, keep on keeping on. And I think that's where I think we can get into indifference. And we don't want to go into indifference and go, like it's all taken care of. No, it's not. Or like it's no use. No, that's not true either. And so I think we do recognize.
The role of the trickster is important here. We see the power that the Daily Show and the Colbert Report and different things where you can poke fun and poke holes in their blowing smoke and all their puffed up rhetoric that is, you know, so blatantly laughable. And
you know what, Randy, that's absolutely true. I like that point. It's the role of the trickster, and it you're right. The Daily Show and Colbert Report are the tricksters that really kind of the court jesters that say, no, this is, look at this. We're laughing at it, but look. And so they show us that the emperor has no clothes.
Right.
And
I read in one of your articles, and just to let people know, you do it's a monthly column that you have in.
It's actually twice a month.
Twice a month, okay. Yeah, bimonthly. And I read one where you defined the patriarchal mindset as narrowness. And I think that really hits it on the head. And it shows right now where, you know, we're so polarized and people aren't willing to shift positions and to look at different perspectives. And there's so much narrow thinking going on.
Narrow rigidity. Exactly.
Yeah.
And not inclusive and not seeing how we're connected and what our relationships are.
And that's why also the whole movement of the personal is political, and it's over time, it's cultural changes, and like you said, this whole evolution of consciousness that really makes deep, lasting changes. And so everything you do in life is part of the process of growing and making powerful, positive connections around and growing community, and there's just so many things like that are part of the change. It's not just political or
no, politics. It's all related, and I think we kind of silo everything. The silo for this, the silo for that, you know, and it's not in silos. You know, the politics is not in its own silo. It's all related. The environment, ecology, politics, spirituality, they're all connected. You know, how we treat one another. It's all one big bowl.
All right, so it's more of a patriarchal model to separate everything. And even in academia, like we've kind of gotten to the end of a lot of different fields, and there's just a dying need for them to cross-pollinate and to form new... Like you said, everything is interrelated, and
Yeah, I mean, it serves us to compartmentalize sometimes, for certain things. It's kind of like Newtonian physics makes the car, for example, but quantum physics is what you need to take big scientific leaps. So I think, that we can be linear sometimes, but that's not where it's at, and we need to say no, this is not the whole reality. And so I think that's what we have to get back to, is to have that balance of the masculine and the feminine, and a balance so that we can care for the earth and care for each other.
Right, and that's the deeper green perspective, how it's not just recycling and this or that, but it's a shift of our whole values and the whole lifestyle. And...
Yeah, exactly.
Another, because sometimes men might be listening to this and get defensive because they're not even realizing necessarily that, we're not talking about male, female, we're talking about masculine and feminine archetypes, which, like you were saying, exist in both of us. Like Margaret Thatcher is a great example of a woman who has a very patriarchal perspective. And another model that you could sometimes use is Apollonian and the Dionysian.
Right.
Another way to think about it, also.
That is true. Interesting about Margaret Thatcher. Yes, she does seem to be an example of a daughter of the patriarchy. However, a little bit maybe of the feminine principle snuck in even to her, because I heard somewhere that she started, when she was in power, a climate change institute in England. So I thought, that's interesting. So that was, she snuck that one in anyway. So I was happy to hear that.
Yeah. Everything's not black and white. And there's examples.
Exactly.
Nixon went to China, and there's all kinds of strange quirks of history.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you resonate with that Dionysian part? Defining things in those kind of terms.
Yeah, I did not talk about that in my book, but I do know what you mean. And the Dionysian would be more the bringing in the feminine, and the Apollonian more the sun, the solar aspects of the masculine, the linear.
Right.
I guess the way I kind of look at it is that, very simplistically, metaphorically, would be the horizontal and the vertical, that the horizontal, the feminine, must meet the vertical, the masculine, and the two are necessary, the horizontal and the vertical in our lives.
And that's often a metaphor for the horizontal being a metaphor for spirituality, which shows how, we need a more holistic perspective that brings in. Soulful.
And it's like, the skyward and earth, the horizontal earth is skyward, and so we need the cross. We need the crux of it is to have the horizontal and the vertical intersect.
And that's also a metaphor of the east and west. I mean, another way of describing the crisis of the world is everything is out of balance, and in the West, we need the wisdom of the East, and the East, they need our science and technology that have, been able to produce, different material things, and the whole world is needing each other and needing to cross-pollinate and needing to come into balance and to share the good things that all cultures and peoples have.
Right. And the fact that there is such a crossover between the East and the West about our cultures, like religion and science and everything, is that I think that's another sign that the globalization and the interconnections of it all, and one more sign that we are really moving towards, we can move towards that kind of feminine and masculine integration, that because we are so instantly unified no matter where we are. Thinking of the dark crystal, which I did not, that's also something I didn't mention in the book, but I think was an interesting Jim Henson production, and that was years ago. When was that, 1990 or something like that? And in the dark crystal, it is a young girl. Pardon me?
Yeah.
You there?
Yeah, I am.
That they have to find the crystal, but the integration at the end wasn't so much that they were killing off this one segment that seemed so, this one population that seemed so awful or so weird. Instead, it had to transform so that it came together in the end. So it was about a transformation that was bringing together the polarities. It was really quite a... I haven't seen it in a long time, so I'll have to go back and look at it. But it was... I think it speaks to what we need to go towards and how in the integration it's not killing off anything, but it's integrating it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, because that was a long time ago, that seems like that was bringing together a lot of different threads of the hero journey story.
Yes.
The different mystical allies. That's another thing that I'm an astrologer, so synchronicities and this last election with Obama, if there wasn't the hurricane and that happened that last week, it's like nature, there's allies and the earth and from unseen places, things can happen. And so I have a lot of hope about the future and the possibility of change and the direction that we can go. That I think the Jungian is great for helping understand that perspective.
Mm-hmm. And I think we can, when we get caught in the moment, we can kind of maybe lose hope or lose sight of the bigger picture. That when we kind of see it as an evolution and evolutionary consciousness, then I think we can be very hopeful.
Right.
And we have...
As part of having vision and having insight to lead us towards our vision, and all these things, are so crucial to keeping our inner hope and motivations and aspirations burning.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Julian of Norwich and her quote. She was a mystic from when, 15th century or something like that, and she would say, "No matter, all is well and all shall be well." And it's that sense of all is well and all shall be well, no matter. It's that the underpinning, underneath it all, there is a divine goodness that's occurring.
Mm-hmm. And part of the hokum, part of the wool being pulled over the eyes of, society on a patriarchal level tries to render people powerless and feeling isolated and
and fear. I think the patriarchy really goes for fear. And I think, let's say, you know, Fox News, it's all about fear, fear, fear. Be afraid, be very afraid. And so it's the sense of getting people's fear going on the one hand, and then on the other hand, supporting their indifference. You know, for people are kind of, what's the use, can't do anything, blah, blah, and then just giving up. And so you have that kind of apathy that happens as well. Maybe it comes out of numbness. So the hypervigilance and the fearfulness, or it can shut people down into that indifferent numbness.
Sure.
And
well, creating
patriarchal.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the patriarchy feeds that. It keeps people down.
Right. And finding alternatives and finding ways to connect with people, and now with the internet, and I run 3 meetup groups, because that's a way that people can get together face to face, and there's starting to be all kinds of ways that community can gather. And we were at a conference. There's all kinds of things where knowledge is being shared, and, you know, so it's unplugging and finding ladders out of that hopeless pit where you are just numb and don't even see that there are alternatives around.
Exactly.
And also, I have a lot of hope just with the young generation. I mean, to some extent, you know, eventually the older fossilized folks die off, and, you know, as the young people come up, they have such a different mindset, and, you know, they go about business completely different. You know, now people have, like, 7 different careers during their life, and things are just changing so fast, and I think the young people can adapt more quickly, and there's just all these new models coming up and new ways of doing things.
Yeah, I think that brings us back to the issues of, let's say, racism, or issues around LGBT issues, that young people, those are non-issues, I think, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so in that sense, the consciousness has already changed, that it's a move towards that. And actually, I come to think of it, part of my work is working in a retirement community one day a week. And even there, I see women who are 90 years old that are very forward thinking, you know, and very accepting. I'm not saying everybody, but it's interesting to see, you know, that there is, that people can change their attitudes, can see things very inclusively, no matter their age. But I do think that young people, it's like it's part of their life. This is what they know.
And we're reaching
certain.
You get to a certain tipping point, and it's like, you know, gay marriage is the certain things where marijuana, whatever, the things where there was no progress for 30, 40 years, and then you get to a tipping point, and things just kind of change overnight.
Exactly.
Amazing. Yeah.
And so we just have to keep on, you know, putting it out there.
Absolutely.
And not stopping, and not collapsing into the powers that be.
Yep. And another, since the colonial mindset is such a great metaphor of that patriarchal energy, I think honoring Native peoples is such an important way to honor and bring a more balanced perspective. And, you know, here in America, we often there's such little acknowledging of the original people and of their culture, and I think that's an important step to redressing and shifting out of some of this patriarchal mindset.
No, that's all part of it, so that we don't forget our history and forget what happened to the Native Americans, forget what happened to the African Americans in this country, and to not literally whitewash our history. And so it's important to bring that to the fore, so that we recognize and grieve, actually grieve for it, and feel the sadness that belongs to that.
And that's
and I
another.
Think that becomes a bit.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that honoring the grief of loss of culture, of loss of people, of from what we did in the past, that that is a feminine thing to do too, in the sense of being open to those kind of shadow feelings.
Mm-hmm. Well, another way we can parse this out, also that one that Jung often did, is logos and eros. And logos is up in his head and just wants to analyze. And so part of the shift, I think, that we're seeing coming forth is where people can be more heart-centered and can hold the heart space to grieve and these things that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, so that it is not logos, but getting into the eros, having the heart space, recognizing the importance of that, recognizing the importance of the body and the earthiness of us all, and not just being into the so-called reasoned intellect.
Right, right.
Not it. We're the whole ball of wax.
Yeah, and that whole embodiment of the goddess, the feminine, is comfortable at being at our home. Our earth is our home. Our body is our home. At being comfortable with our body, and so much of those kind of things relate also.
Yeah, it's I remember years ago, I think one of my first ventures into public speaking was when I was a graduate student, and I went to a very heady graduate school, and I went and said, you know, it's not just all airhead thought, it's earth body action. Okay. Even then I was trying to integrate, you know, it's not just the logos, but it's also the eros. It's not just the intellect, but it's also has to be embodied. So
we have someone that wants to join our conversation. Let's see. I'm going to turn on their mic. And hello there, you're unmuted. Did you have
I'm
a question or comment?
I'm just listening.
Okay. Sounds good. I was just checking about that. Any other insights? Do you feel that's another way to parse this out, the Eros logos divide?
I think that, again, I think probably to look at living more horizontally and less hierarchically is a way of moving out of that divide and being more in partnership and relationship and connection. I think is a way to do that. I'm kind of stumped for words right at the moment, but yeah.
Right. The Eros, you know, is also historically connected with arts, and, you know, being an astrologer, I think of Venus and how, you know, Venus, the feminine principle, and the role of the artist. And we were also saying, you know, the trickster and the comedian. There's, you know, traditionally Mars, the military, gets along with the king and the government. But the artist, Venus, is not trusted by the government. And we see the huge reaction of Pussy Riot in Russia, you know, they find that Venus energy very threatening. The power structures do not like artistic comets going on that expose their shadow.
Yes, it kind of pulls out the shadow and takes down the persona. And
right.
It's the unveiling. It's the, you know, it's the showing the emperor has no clothes. And the emperor doesn't like that.
Not at all.
And the
emperor doesn't have a sense of humor.
Oh. So, no, I think you're right. It is the artist. And I think the interesting thing about the Pussy Riots and now what Putin's up to now. So I don't know enough about what is going on now and all the intricacies of all that, but I certainly am interested to see more of what the Pussy Riots, what those incredibly courageous women have to say.
Yeah, and certainly I would say dictatorial type of behavior is definitely more patriarchal.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, I think I was just talking to a client today about, how did we get on this? But it was more the idea of people want to give over choice, believe it or not, to authority. Oh, let somebody else take care of it. Oh, no matter what I do, it doesn't matter. And it's that sense of apathy and indifference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those things do lead to somebody taking the power and say, okay, I'll take the power, and they become very dictatorial. I mean, not become, they are. And they take over in that vacuum because other people have said, you know, you do it. I don't know how to make the choice, or I don't want to take care of that. So in that indifference, people like Putin, people like Hitler get to run the show.
Right,
I think it is important. I think Plato said that thousands of years ago. You know, it's indifference that allows for evil men to, and now it could be evil women, but evil men to take over.
Hmm. Yeah,
and
then the importance of, you know, history is always really just a few people that gather and organize and create change. It happens in small groups and when they build the bigger things. So, yeah. Great. Well, do you want to share your blog and website information?
Thank you, sure. Well, my blog is www.woundedfemininerising.com, woundedfemininerising.com. My website is www.drgados.com, that's drgajdos.com. And love to hear from people, and I'm so happy, Randy, that you had me on your show. I really appreciate it. I must admit I'm getting a little tired because of time change.
Hit with that. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on, and this will be archived, so people, you can post a link on your blog or whatever. And any closing thoughts you want to end on?
Well, I'm hoping that I would like to have people really look around and see where they think the feminine principle is rising, where the feminine principle is being buried, and to really question in themselves what they would like to do to help their own feminine principle rise within them, and in all sorts of ways. Just ask the question every day and say, okay, is this... Where am I with this? And two, I hope that when my book comes out, people will want to buy it and read it. Quiet Wisdom in Loud Times, The Rise of the Wounded Feminine. I'm hoping to have it be published in the next month or so. So I thank you so much for giving me this opportunity, Randy.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on. Thanks so much. And
you take care.
Yeah, take care. Thanks again. Okay, well,
thank you.
Thanks. This concludes another show, and we'll be back next Monday, 10 p.m. every Monday. And appreciate folks listening. Have a good evening.